The fifth case of the morning is number 06-2808, the United States of America against Chaban.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is David Dana, counsel for the appellant, Mr. Chaban. This was a very complicated case below, but as it's framed on appeal, the appellant would argue there are really just three pretty straightforward issues. The first is that the judge, although he did an excellent job, generally miscalculated the sentencing guidelines by using more than 2 points for obstruction of justice when the plain language of the guidelines only allows 2 points. The second is that the judge relied on the guidelines. He understood that they were advisory after Booker, but he specifically used them for advice and imposed a within-guideline sentence, and that therefore there was an error in the sentencing that was not harmless because the error was used as a basis for the sentencing. I believe that reversing or vacating the sentence and remanding would be consistent with the Supreme Court's decisions in Booker and Rita, which affirm that correct calculation of the sentencing guidelines is important, even though the guidelines are not inherently binding, and also affirms that the level of appellate review can be fine-tuned or different for in-guideline sentences versus out-guideline sentences. There's also some precedent from other circuits, most recently the Tenth Circuit, that takes the view that when there is a sentencing guideline miscalculation, as here, even after Booker and the sentencing guideline, a within-guideline sentence is imposed, that there should be a straightforward vacating of the sentence. If there are any further questions or any questions, reserve time.
Thank you, Mr. Dana. We'll now hear from Ms. Jackson.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Sharon Jackson. I represent the United States of America in this appeal. Mr. Dana is correct. There are three questions before the court, although I would phrase them just a little differently. The first question before this court on appeal is, how did the district court treat the levels that it assessed for the defendant's multifaceted obstructive conduct that occurred before, during, and before and during the trial? The second question is, did the district court err by incorporating a departure analysis in calculating the range that it used in formulating the sentence? And then third, was the sentence imposed reasonable as articulated by the district court in giving its reasons under 3553A? And I think the very first question is the threshold question, and how did the district court treat the six levels total that were imposed for the defendant's multifaceted obstructive conduct that occurred extensively throughout this case? And it is clear when you do a close reading of the entire posture of the framework of how we got to sentencing, all the pleadings that were filed, the pre-sentence report, and what the district court said, that it becomes clear that the district court only assessed two levels under 3C1.1 for the defendant's obstructive conduct related to his own perjurious testimony that was given to trial. The additional total of up to four levels that were assessed by the district court were calculated as upward departures for obstructive conduct that was not adequately addressed by 3C1.1. When you look at the pre-sentence report and the addendum, when you look at the government sentencing memorandum and the objections filed by both parties, when you look at the district court statements made at sentencing, and most importantly, the defendant's pro se Rule 32H pleading that was filed after sentencing, as well as the district court's elaboration at the supplemental sentencing hearing June 27th, everyone understood that departures were considered and imposed in this case for the defendant's obstructive conduct. And the court, while it may not have used the magic words that we sometimes hear that this is a case outside the heartline, or use the magic words of actually finding the original guideline range before considering the departure, any error that he made in that is a harmless error in this case, because the court made clear as he started out that he was going to deal with the obstructive conduct both as under 3C1.1 and as a departure as he went along. And at the sentencing transcript at page 103, the court says something to the effect that there was obstructive conduct by this defendant, and I will address that as I go through the guidelines and address the balance of the objections relating to an upward adjustment on obstruction of justice. So it is clear that the additional levels were imposed as upward departure. Which brings us to the second question, and did the district court err in undertaking a departure analysis in calculating the guideline range that was used to impose this sentence. This court, in its cases, has said that that is an error to do it, but this court has also found that that error is harmless. We submitted supplemental legal authority that perhaps the Supreme Court's case, recent decision this past summer in Rita versus United States, calls into question whether the departure analysis is now obsolete, as this court has said.
Could you expand upon that a little bit, please? I really stopped and gave that some thought. You think, in other words, we need to reconsider our decision in light of Rita?
In light of Rita, I think it is appropriate for this court to reassess whether a departure analysis is now obsolete and should not be undertaken by district court. While the heart of the Rita decision is what is the appellate review of a within-guideline sentence, there is at least three occasions in the Rita decision where the court, where the Supreme Court discusses the appropriate procedure a sentencing court should use in determining the reasonable sentence. And at three different places, the court makes reference to sentencing courts undertaking or considering a departure analysis. That differs with what this court has said.
In the old days, we used to require that if a district court wanted to depart from a guideline sentence, it was to do it with, we said, within the structure of the guidelines. Is that, in effect, what you think Judge Tinder did here?
I think what I believe Judge Tinder did, and what I...
Use the framework even though he knew he was beyond what the guidelines would have.
He was beyond the original guidelines, but within the framework of the guidelines, because the guidelines, as originally written, did consider departures as appropriate under certain circumstances.
Put it another way, you think that he simply, of his own volition, just decided that the guidelines was a useful tool for him to use to calculate how much more he ought to give this person?
I think that's absolutely correct, and I think his own words say that. In the June 27th, hearing, the supplemental sentencing hearing, the court said something to the effect whether his sentence is viewed as a sentencing guideline sentence that incorporates departures or as a sentence outside the guidelines, this sentence is reasonable. So I think the district court judge did use the departure analysis as his initial framework in deciding what the range should be. But then he took it a step further, and he looked at the factors under Section 3553A and said, the departure analysis mirrors my own view of how this sentence should be calculated using the factors in 3553A. And therefore, I would reach the same decision and the same sentence regardless of whether I did the departure analysis or whether I just looked at 3353A. In both instances, he found implicitly that the straight guideline sentence was inappropriate in this case, given the defendant's conduct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Dana have? Thank you. Mr. Dana, I, for one, would appreciate your view on the last point that the government made as to whether the Rita case really stands as separate and independent validation of the what the district court did in this case.
I think it's quite the contrary, Your Honor. I think Rita, although there's language in the opinion that goes in different places about how to use the terms of what district courts should do, Rita fundamentally affirms that it makes a difference. It's appropriate or reasonable for a court, for an appellate court, to gear its appellate review to whether the sentence fell within the guidelines or not. And logically, that means that the calculation of the guidelines and the question of whether the sentence falls within the guidelines is an important thing, because it's something that the court affirmed can lead to a strong presumption of reasonableness on appellate review. If there's no difference between the guidelines and what's outside it, the terminology certainly has changed. The court now is talking about sentences within the heartland or the heart of the guideline factors. But if it doesn't matter whether the calculation was correct and whether it's clearly demarcated as within guidelines or not, then really the ultimate conclusion of the court, which was to uphold circuits like this one that apply a strong presumption of reasonableness in guideline sentences, that wouldn't make any sense. That only makes sense if it does matter that the district court correctly calculate the guidelines and make it clear whether the sentence actually is a guideline sentence or without. The term departure may be now obsolete, But whether a sentence actually falls within a correctly calculated guideline, I think is not, and I think in fact Rita's holding underlies that, supports that. The other thing I would say about the record is the record in this case is very unclear, but I bring up 2 points. One, at least in substantial part, Mr. Chabon represented himself. And in that context, I think that one has to hope that the record would be clear, that the language used would be clear, since he, in effect, was acting as his own legal counsel. The second thing is when the judge actually came to imposing the sentence, in the sentence that's clear, he said something to the effect that the sentencing guideline range was 135 to 168 months, and that he was imposing toward the height of the guideline range of 160 months, and not going totally to the top because of family matters. For Mr. Chabon. So the framework that the judge used, even if he used different language in different places, was clearly, here is a guideline range, I'm imposing within the range. And that is important because that would affect the appellate review. The reason that it's important whether something's within the guidelines is it doesn't make sense for this court to apply a strong presumption of reasonableness for guideline sentences, but not unless it really matters whether something's correctly calculated.
Thank you, Mr. Dana. Mr. Dana, you also serve by appointment of the court, and you have the deep thanks of the court for your efforts on behalf of your client. Our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.